So happy to have with us now our good friend from FoxSports.com, Alex Marvez. Alex, welcome back to the show.
Vic, thanks for having me back. I didn't screw it up that bad the first time, apparently.
Never, my friend, never. Lots to talk about, and I want to start with your – we always love the national perspective on the Browns, your thoughts on the draft that they had, which is getting a lot of positive reviews, and the mini camp followed up, the rookie mini camp, where Brandon Whedon in particular drew some favorable impressions.
Amen to that, and also Travis Benjamin, a player I follow closely from the University of Miami. South Florida is my stomping grounds, and we know this kid can run, and that is an element in the offense that the Cleveland Browns needed. They needed more speed there. See, I'm a Greg Little guy. I really do believe that Greg is going to continue to improve as an NFL player. I list him as one of my breakout players at FoxSports.com. I've got 32 from all around the league, and I think Greg, you know, having converted from running back pretty early in his college career, a lot being thrown at him last year. We saw the drops, but we also saw a ton of athletic potential. And if he's got a speed threat on the outside that goes ahead and takes some of the attention away from him, I think this Browns offense can just be that much more effective. Hey, Trent Richardson, this kid is so impressive, and what you have to love is the system fit. Vic, you know, Brad Childress, we know the type of West Coast offense he runs. It isn't Andy Reid's offense, for example, that Brad was offensive coordinator for in Philadelphia. This is a pound-the-rock type of offense where you have that marquee back, that bell cow back, and then that creates opportunities in the passing game. Trent Richardson is going to be able to do that. Clearly, the young man knows how to carry himself. People in Cleveland have a lot to get excited about there. Brandon Whedon, hey, he's going to push Colt McCoy, and that's really where this is at. Mike Holmgren was honest, maybe too honest, in admitting, hey, we really wanted Kendall Wright, but we were happy that Brandon Whedon was there, and I don't think that the Browns could have messed around, started dropping back, and gone ahead and decided, you know, we'll try to get him in the second round. It wasn't going to work that way. Denver was too anxious to try to get him. They settled for Brock Osweiler because the Browns got Brandon Whedon. Mitchell Schwartz is going to come in and start right away, probably a right tackle. And by the way, how fortuitous is it to draft John Hughes when poor Phil Taylor tears a peck? John Hughes, get ready to play, young man.
Yeah, no question. And as of all the things you said, and they're all right on, with regard to Whedon, I think the interesting thing, too, is just seeing in the short time that a three-day mini camp gives you to assess anything is the big arm, but the accuracy, the tight spiral, all those points that I think from the quarterback position of this team that you just haven't seen and that you need to see and you know can make that position better.
Vic, let's be honest here. If he were 23 years old coming out, he goes in the top 12, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you're talking about here. And, you know, kudos to the Browns for not being caught up in age because, look, too much can change in this league going forward. If you have to worry about Brandon Whedon at age 34, then guess what? He's given you five good years, right? And
right.
When you think about it, how many teams don't even have a quarterback in a five-year span? I live in South Florida. I've seen the Miami Dolphins do this game. If they think Brandon Whedon can be that guy, then that's great. But you know what else it does? It forces Colt McCoy to step up a little bit, too. It provides some competition for him. Was it fair to go ahead and judge Colt McCoy on what happened last year when the Browns were so bereft of offensive weapons? No, but that's how life is in the NFL right now, and it's up to Colt to step up, go ahead and try to fend off Brandon Whedon. The one thing I think that this is going to make both of these players better, having two guys to go ahead and compete against each other.
Elsewhere in the AFC North, always interesting to talk about those other teams, in particular the Pittsburgh Steelers. Some questions being raised. There was an interesting piece in the Beaver County Times in Pennsylvania about Mike Tomlin's decision to not only hire Todd Haley as an offensive coordinator, going out of the Steeler family, so to speak, to bring in an outsider as a coach to run the offense, but also the idea that Haley's terminology, which is different than what this team knew these players had worked with, Ben Roethlisberger and the rest of the offense, that is going to be integrated into the whole team rather than doing what is often done when you bring in a new coach, is just have his terminology sort of work in conjunction with what the players already know. How much of a challenge and a risk is this for the Steelers?
I think it's just a risk bringing Todd Haley in the building. I mean, you know, that's how it is. Todd has a very strong-willed personality. I'm a Todd Haley fan, but I also know this is going to be a very interesting dynamic with Ben Roethlisberger. He is going to give Ben some tough love, maybe some tough love that Ben hasn't gotten in recent years under Bruce Arians. In fact, really, I think this is the method to what Mike Tomlin is trying to do. I don't want to say madness, but I think he feels that Ben Roethlisberger may have gotten a little bit complacent. The offense was going in a direction that he didn't like. He thinks that Ben Roethlisberger, I think, can get even better going forward, and I think Todd Haley is one of those guys that can bring it out of him. But there's going to be a feeling out process. I also think, too, when it comes to that offensive turn, terminology, Vic, maybe what this says, if you read between the lines, is that the type of offense that Todd Haley is putting in is really radically different from what Bruce Arians had installed with the Cleveland Browns, with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And at that point, you may as well just go ahead, learn an entirely new terminology. The good thing for Ben is that he's been around the league so much that I don't think he's going to have a difficult time adjusting to this. And remember, too, you probably have two first-year starters on offense in David DeCastro and Mike Adams, their first two draft picks. You got to figure these young men don't have an old system to go ahead and forget. They're going to be able to learn this pretty effectively as well. So I understand where it's coming from. There's going to be a lot of scrutiny placed on the Steelers, Ben Roethlisberger, and Todd Haley. It's going to be fascinating to see how that marriage develops and if it can work out successfully or if in a year or two we're heading to divorce court.
Alex Marvez, FoxSports.com, one of the finest in the business of covering the National Football League. So we go over to the AFC East, and let's talk about Wes Welker. This has been a hot topic. Welker on a radio station in Boston talking about the reasons he wouldn't hold out or not be part of what the Patriots are doing this offseason and certainly being part of this team this season. He has a franchise tag, often the franchise tender, the one-year deal that is a turnoff for players. They always want the long-term deal and the more money that comes with that. In this case, it's a $9.5 million guarantee one-year contract, and Welker said he had 9.5 million reasons not to hold out for this team. But doesn't that, Alex, just destroy any leverage he has to try to get that long-term deal done?
I think the reality is that Wes knows where he's at. Yeah, if you're an agent, that makes you cringe because it's pretty obvious. Look, you know Wes Welker isn't going to hold out, and you can't blame him for that. Remember, too, Wes wants to be part of a team, and the New England Patriots are a very different organization than others. If you have players start to go ahead and bellyache about cash too much publicly, well, that is a real big turnoff for a franchise that stresses that team element. You know what I mean. There are other franchises that you'll go ahead, Matt Forte, for example, and think about what an ordeal that has become, or OCU Manura and his situation with his contract. So, you know, the Patriots, that's really frowned upon by the organization. So what Wes said, I think, helps him save some face with the players so they understand where he is at. I think the Patriots, though, have really done a nice job covering themselves here. Reality is they've signed about every veteran free agent wide receiver, it seems, you could think of, the one that was willing to accept a one-year type contract. And what they're doing, Vic, is taking advantage of the middle class in New England. Okay, this is the year that a lot of players went on the market and found out, hey, there's so many free agents out here, we don't have a home. So let's go ahead and go to New England, try to reinvent ourselves like Mark Anderson did, played on a one-year deal with the Patriots, had double-digit sacks, ends up cashing in with the Buffalo Bills and signs a nice contract there. Well, there are some players, your Jabbar Gaffneys, your Anthony Gonzalez's. You know, you re-sign Deion Branch. Chad Ochocinco restructures his contract. All these players know there isn't anything better out there, so they're going to go ahead and try to stick with New England. So New England covers itself. Bottom line is, if Wes Welker is going to get a deal, it's not going to be a mega deal. It's going to be a three-year type of contract in all likelihood that would allow him to continue to play for the Pats. But I also think New England is looking for a little bit of life beyond Wes Welker and realize, hey, there's a slot receiver taking a lot of hits in his 30s. Let's go ahead and make sure that we're not overspending, which the Patriots are loath to do when it comes to veteran players.
Right. Right. Alex, a couple older guys trying to still find their way into or onto teams and stick around, currently kind of hanging out there. Donovan McNabb being one of them. And he, of course, you know, wants to says he still wants to play, isn't ready to retire. Terrell Owens, you know, still hanging out, I guess playing some arena football, but he too wants to get involved with a team in the NFL, and so far no takers there. Do you see any landing spots for either of these guys? And in the case of McNabb, could you see him settling for anything but an opportunity to start?
Yeah, you know, that's the problem you have with Donovan McNabb. This guy really isn't a mentor. You know what I mean? And look, that's just how he wants to roll, but Donovan is all about Donovan McNabb. And it's clear. You know, he asked for his release last year. Rather than go ahead and say, I'm going to serve as a mentor to Christian Ponder, instead, no, I want to play. I'm not starting. I'm demoted to a third-string role. I'm out of here. Cut me. You know, even though it cost him money, and he ended up not getting another job. The thing is there anything else there with Donovan, 20 pounds lighter? My feeling is this. There may be a team that suffers a catastrophic injury quarterback, I hate to say it, but is looking for a starter to come in and play. It seems to happen every year, Vic, and Donovan McNabb would probably be near the top of that list, at least as a, you know, type of guy that can hold it, a placeholder type quarterback.
Right.
And then he could try to prove himself, but I didn't see much left in the tank the past couple seasons out of Philadelphia. His accuracy is just so bad. His habits are bad, Vic. You know, and that it's unfortunate, but, you know, Brad Childress, I mean, he saw it. He had to coach him for a couple years. He just didn't seem to want to listen to coaching at the end, and he threw so many ground balls, I thought he was playing shortstop, you know, like bouncing the ball to first base.
Yeah.
As for T.O., do you want to invite that type of drama on your team unless you absolutely have to?
No.
I don't think so. That's the problem. And, you know, there's still some players out there. Look at Plaxico Burress, for example. Look at all those veteran receivers in New England. You know that a Chad Ochocinco or a Deion Branch, one of those guys is going to become available at some point during the preseason because they can't carry all of them. So if you're a team with a wide receiver need like the Cleveland Browns, I would just think you're going to go ahead and wait. See what else is out there. Braylon Edwards is still out there. There's still some quality wide receivers out there that can get you by for the short term. I just don't think with all the drama that T.O. brings, all the baggage, and on top of that, a diminishing player who's not been a great locker room presence during his time, who's gone ahead and harangued quarterbacks in his day. It's a sad end to T.O., but it's also he's reaping what he's sowing, or he's sown through all his years in the NFL, and going on Dr. Phil did not help him at all.
No, I don't think it did whatsoever. I think that did a lot to damage him. All right, great stuff as always, Alex. We appreciate it, and we look forward to talking with you down the line.
Awesome, Vic. Thanks so much.
He is Alex Marvez from FoxSports.com. Go there to check out his great work of covering this league. Joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, it's driven by Liberty Ford, brought to you by Madden NFL 12. EA Sports, it's in the game.